This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
You heard it. We heard it. Everyone hears it. Obviously, we hate that, and we every time we come out on this floor, these fans show up and show out. So we've got to. It's our responsibility as players to give them something to cheer for. And you know, tonight we probably deserve that. You know, we didn't give them anything to cheer for. We were down 40 in the first half, and that's not acceptable. And we believe in everybody in this locker room. We believe we've got what it takes to win games against anybody in the league, and we've shown that we can compete with anybody. And it just has to be a consistent thing for us. And we have to be able to put four quarters of good basketball together, and I truly do believe that we have enough talent in this locker room to compete with anybody in the league. And obviously tonight we didn't do that, and the crowd was rightfully upset. And you know, as I said, that we've got an opportunity in 24 hours to come back here tomorrow night and give them something to cheer about. So you know, I'm confident in this group that we'll bounce back and be ready to go from tomorrow.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is the voice of Josh Giddey. He is going to get an extended run here. They need to know about him so they know what to do with him when the season is over. And I don't know what to do with him, Mr. David. I'm not sure what the answer is.
Well, it's difficult to know what to do about any of these guys, really. You're looking at the final 28 games now, or it's really bleak for the remainder of the season for the Bulls. They are in a position where they are oddly still in the play-in conversation. And yet, that doesn't look like a team that is going to stay there for long after last night. They missed 20 straight threes to start the game. And we have not been able to find an NBA team that has missed 20 straight games or 20 straight three-pointers in recent history, although there has been one in a playoff game. Houston Rockets in 2018 against the Golden State Warriors missed 27 straight three-point shots. The Bulls have an opportunity to match that tonight and break their own record. I don't know if that's a team record. I think that they keep track of many things in the great post-game notes they sent out to the media who covered the team. I did not see that one in the details. In the notes.
Yeah, I think it's difficult.
Tough sledding.
No doubt about it.
Josh Giddey also referenced the booing. There was booing last night early, and when you score 29 points and a half, that's going to happen. I don't know how the Bulls can respond tonight with anything but 48 minutes of effort. That you've got to appeal to their pride, whatever it is. They don't play again for a week. They get a week off. Leave it all out there. That's all you got to play for tonight. Just you can't go into the break as pathetically as last night left us feeling, because it was bad.
Yeah, no, it was awful. And you know, you're absolutely right. They don't necessarily need to win the game, but they need to compete. If they don't compete tonight at all, I think you do go into the All-Star break just kind of with this feeling of not, oh, they're trying to make the play-in. It's more of a feeling of, wow, they have nothing. They've got nothing to count on, to build on moving forward here. It's an awful feeling, frankly. And they looked, the last two games, as you point out, you know, they at least were in the Golden State game for a while before it turned into an absolute blowout. They led in that game, and you thought they were going to compete in that game, and then they just fell apart and got blown out. But whatever that was yesterday was just – it was just – I'm hoping they do have a lot of flu issues, and I'm hoping that they can recover by tonight because that was awful.
Meanwhile, the Pistons suddenly got – and is it so suddenly? But they suddenly got good. And they suddenly got a team that now is two games over 500 in the East that qualifies as the sixth seed.
Yep.
And they look like they have some depth. They've got some pieces. And this is a team that looks athletic even without Jaden Ivey, who suffered that terrible season-ending injury.
Yep.
Feel bad for him and hope he comes back healthy and whole. But this is a Pistons team that looks like they have turned the corner a little bit in that conference. I don't know if it's sustainable. Cade Cunningham is a terrific player.
He's a good player.
And you don't know if you're the Bulls, you look at that as a model or if you look at that as hope, but who is your Cunningham? Is it Matas Buzelis?
I think, unfortunately, Matas Buzelis is the answer to every question regarding the future of the program because he's only – is he still 19 or is he?
He's 20. He turned 20.
Okay, so he's 20 years old.
Face of the franchise.
Face of the franchise. He's the only guy that you'd say don't trade him. He might have a pretty good future. I think that he's the only guy representing him at the All-Star game. He's going to be in the dunk contest on Saturday night. We'll all be huddled around the TV waiting to see what
really?
That is. Well, it was more or less a reference to how they're supposed to be the second of the two snowstorms is supposed to hit Saturday. So I'm not sure we're going to be out of the
house. Is that the weekend forecast calls for?
Isn't that it? Dustin is okay. The guy that watches the Weather
that's
Channel
correct.
Religiously.
All right. So Saturday.
No, that's not accurate.
Well, I mean.
Watch my guy Bill Wright over at WGN.
The weather? You don't know the weather? The weather better than anyone.
Nonetheless. So Saturday's going to be, you're going to watch the dunk contest.
It's supposed to snow today, and I haven't even looked out the window.
It's not snowing yet.
Okay, good.
It's too early.
Supposedly at 9 a.m. it starts, and it snows all day. And then, what is it, Dustin, Saturday?
It's going to get really cold tonight, so make sure you move the snow because you don't want it frozen.
Right.
You have to get out the pickaxe. And then, Saturday again.
Okay.
So if Buzelis is as much as he is purported to be, and I'm not saying he isn't, but I do think he's going to have to learn some games to take more than seven shots. Last night was one of them.
Seven
shots is the most disturbing statistic that you see. Even 20 straight
five of seven.
Missed threes is bad. But when you have your centerpiece now, being a guy that is starting now, more getting increased minutes now.
Did he take a three?
He's got to take more than seven shots.
Did he take a three? I'm not sure. I know one of his misses was a layup. I don't remember him taking a three, but then none of them went in. So do you remember anyone?
I don't remember anybody.
I remember Io hit the first three, right? It was they missed 20, and then he hit one, and they missed
a few
more.
They lost by 40.
He
made both threes that he attempted.
Who did?
Matas.
He did? Okay.
Two for two.
He made two. That's pretty good.
Should have shot three or more.
Shoot 20.
Yeah, I should have shot more.
You can make 10 of them.
He had the lowest plus minus at minus 17.
Yeah. When you lose by 40, it's going to be ugly.
The Vooch minus 33.
Played 19 minutes. Maybe it's an effort thing after when you score 29 points in the first half, everybody's going to play.
Yeah.
And you're going to have nights like that where Javon Carter gets 11 minutes and you look through and Kevin Herter had 21. He was 2 for 7. And has he hit a three pointer as a Bull yet? He was 0 for 3 last night. It's just unfortunate.
It's unfortunate.
And everything is now about Buzelis, and I think all the conversations moving forward are building around him. But
I say this?
Yeah.
Without complimenting the Bulls or without giving them yet another excuse, that team hasn't been together. So they got three new guys that are looking for some place to fit in. They haven't even had a practice. They haven't even had a chance to kind of learned that, and we didn't even think they were going to be here, to be brutally honest about it. But I'm just saying that they're playing a team that has been together and that is together. I mean, I'm not making
no,
it sounds
I'll,
like
I'll
I'm
add to that.
Excuse.
I'll add to that because I think that the people booing last night, understandably so, how many of those people that were disgusted by what they were watching also were clamoring for the Bulls to trade Zach LaVine.
Yes.
This is part of picking a lane.
Well,
this is part of going down that dark alley that is the road to nowhere, perhaps.
Honestly, I'd feel better about it if that were the case. If they had traded Vooch, if they had traded, and I don't know who would have gone. Was it Io who was going to go, or was it
one of the two?
Was it Kobe?
But whoever. Yeah, that's fair.
I'm saying, had they played that badly after getting rid of their team, you'd feel one way about it. But they only got rid of Zach.
But only is a lot. He's the best player.
I know he is.
He was 25 points a game. He was the guy that, in a night like that, not that they didn't get blown out when he was here because they were bad as well, but he might have stopped the bleeding a little bit quicker last night.
He might have hit a three.
He might have hit a three and stopped that streak of 20 straight. So now it's all about Well, it's not all about the final 28 games. Sorry, AK. It's not about making something out of this season. It's about the future. It's about really bottoming out and hoping for a lottery pick and be as high in the draft as possible because this is a deep draft. How deep is it? I don't know.
Three players.
Okay.
At least three
Dylan
players.
Harper, Ace Bailey, and Cooper Flagg.
Yeah.
So that was brings us to yesterday. We should revisit this real quickly. Kendall Gill believes in Montez Bozelles, and he was on the midday show talking about, well, you know what, Montez Bozelles in Kendall Gill's mind already greater than Cooper Flagg.
I just think his upside is tremendous, and I know a lot of people talking about, well, let's lose and get the draft pick so we can get in the Cooper Flagg sweepstakes. Guess what, guys? You already got Cooper Flagg. Listen to me. I saw Montez take Cooper Flagg apart when they played one-on-one.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I saw it with my own eyes. He's bigger. He can handle the basketball better. In my opinion, he's more athletic. And they both have the same mentality. But I like Modest's upside simply because I like his athleticism more and I like his mentality more than Cooper Flagg. He can also shoot the basketball better than Cooper Flagg. Say, hey, listen, 3 years from now, you're going to be saying Kendall was right.
Okay. And I'm not saying Kendall is wrong. Kendall knows a lot more about the game than I do. I will just say that Cooper Flagg is what? Is he 18 years old?
He's young.
He's a young
He's 2 years
freshman.
Younger than Matas.
So he's a young man who is doing very well in college, probably going to be the college player of the year. Am I exaggerating there?
No, I don't think so. I think he's got a shot at that, a good shot at that.
And I think he's going to probably be the first pick in the draft. Unless I'm wrong about that, too. Again, he'll be definitely in the first couple
picks.
Well,
I think he's the consensus number one.
Yes, and he did well. You know, going into college, he did well when he played against the U.S. national
team. His reputation began to explode after that footage was released of him dominating practices.
Which is absurd. And so I think you get him, and you got Matas as well. You're doing pretty well. You're moving toward being a lot better, but I don't know what to make about what happened yesterday because the problem was the utter and complete lack of aggression in all aspects of the game. You had a lot of guys kind of standing around. You know, Stacy at one point is using the telestrator and shows you everybody standing around in a circle, and he said, right here, Patrick Williams, you cut through this lane and that's going to free up somebody else to move over, and you'll get a good shot out of one piece of floor movement. They didn't have any, it seemed.
Yeah, they did not. They did not do anything really particularly well. I think if for Modest Bozelles to be the guy that Kendall Gill described, then you would like to see him begin to use these final 28 games to assert himself offensively, to be more aggressive in hunting his shot, to do the kinds of things that you don't look at a box score after a terrible loss and say, he's got seven shots. If he's that guy, he can't have seven shots.
He might be a willing defender, but he is not a good defender. He's not a guy.
There's a difference there.
I mean, so, he might be a guy willing to learn how, and you got to help him.
Do you think he can be one?
I don't know.
Given the way he has his athleticism.
I think he's an offensive player.
He's a good shot blocker.
But I think that his problem is that guys go around him fairly easily.
Maybe that is definitely the number one priority in his game.
And he loses his player sometimes if you watch him attempt to play defense. Mm-hmm.
He's a good shot blocker. So he makes up for some of those, I guess, inconsistencies defensively. But you'd like to see him just be a little bit more of a consistent defender. No doubt about that. I just don't know how much to expect from him. I didn't expect to be in a situation where he was 11th pick of the draft, the final 28 games, and we are looking at him as a cornerstone of this franchise.
He is. He's the first name that comes up when you talk about what they have. It's not like you're sitting there. You know, Kobe didn't have a great game. No one had a good game on the Bulls. No one.
This was the most disturbing thing that I heard last night from Billy Donovan postgame. When he talked about, embarrassing, he said that, all those things. And he talked about the biggest difference being the physicality.
There's nothing you can do about that. He told you he's looking out at the floor and he sees a bunch of grown men and then this weak arse team that he's coaching.
But he also said that he would like to see, he almost like accepted that premise that there were going to be times where the Bulls don't have the physicality of other teams, which I think is one thing to concede, and maybe it's a really indictment on the roster.
It is an indictment.
It's a terrible indictment on the roster, but it's worse when he says that he'd like to see them even like take a charge.
Somebody should
take a charge.
How about
that means
it?
Like a lack of effort and commitment and intensity.
It means that they're overmatched and they're not doing anything about it. They're not even leading the league in floor burns.
You can't be both. You can't be overmatched physically because you have a roster that doesn't fit together and maybe guys getting to know each other. And a team that lacks effort.
Take a charge, you'll fire everyone up.
Or at least will show that you care.
Yeah.
Or that you're noticing
that you're trying to do little
blown
things.
Out. And you won't get booed if you try.
No, you won't.
You get booed because of a lack of effort or because of lack of ability.
Can we hear some of that? Let's listen to what Billy had to say, because I think you're right. That was as damning as anything he said.
We didn't shoot the ball well, at all. And then that happens. Right, but there's other things we got to try to make up for, And I thought, I'm not saying it was a difference in the game, the shooting. There was a lot more to it that, but I just thought their overall physicality against us. You know, we had a hard time breaking away, getting off screens. I thought they ran through us straight to the rim. That was the biggest difference in the game. You know, for me, besides the shooting, I get it. We didn't shoot the ball great. But even if had we shot the ball better, I'm not so sure, still would have been a game. We would have had a chance to win just because I thought they were just physically overwhelmed us.
Yeah. Physically overwhelmed us.
Physically overwhelmed them, and they had more effort.
Who's Detroit's backup center? He came in and was like a man among boys. It was like
Stewart?
Yeah.
Isaiah Stewart.
Was that unbelievable? I mean, he looked like a grown-ass man.
He's got some nasty to him.
And he does.
He's got some nasty to him.
But he's not Shaq, and he looked like Shaq against the Bulls.
They've got some pieces. You know, you look at some of their Malik Beasley hit 8 out of 12 shots. And Cade Cunningham is outstanding. And you got all kinds of things that are fitting together the way they envision them fitting together. And I did get a kick out of seeing Dennis Schroeder check in. How many teams has he been on in the last week? Wasn't he traded from the Warriors to the Heat to the Jazz to the Pistons?
Traded like four or five times.
Yeah. Four times in 3 days, and now he's on Detroit. And he gives them a little bit more depth. And so that's a team that did not expect to maybe be where they are at this stage of the season, but there they are. You know, the Pistons further ahead than the Bulls. I just think that you look at the Eastern Conference and you wonder, how far away are the Bulls? And it's not 28 games. And then you look, what's their offseason plan? Their offseason plan is hope.
Yeah, that's their offseason plan. That's their plan right now. Their plan is, well, they got lucky because Matas should probably have gone earlier in the draft, and we got this guy. We just need to do that about 5 or 6 more years.
And wasn't it something to see? I know we talked about DePaul a little bit earlier. Paul Reed playing for the Pistons. He's carved out. He's been around for a little while now, and he is a guy that you see at the end of an NBA bench contributing in a way. He's been in the league now for a while. DePaul product. So, yeah, everyone got a chance to play for the Pistons last night because the Bulls were not putting up much resistance at all.
It was awful. Yeah. I'm not sure what could change. I'm not sure what is going to be different tonight. Maybe, you know, I mean, honestly, if you're lucky, everybody had the flu. And they're not as bad as
yeah. Let's hope but, you're right. But, let's I mean, hope the flu outbreak
really,
is to blame.
You're really rolling the bones
there's
on that
no
one.
Other reason to believe what or to think. That, there's no other excuse for that lack of effort.
I had the chills and a fever is not a great way of defining why your defense was so awful. 312-644-6767 is Molly and Hall at Chicago Sports Radio 670.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code STYLE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code STYLE. Enjoy.
Score.
Based on these three teams, we've been advocating Tigers since day one. But now that the Cubs are involved in this,
yeah,
the fit there makes a lot of sense. It's a division that's ripe for a takeover. Milwaukee's lost some pieces. The Cardinals are rebuilding. We still don't know where the Reds are. The Bucks didn't do much to help the lineup. Look at this with Alex Bregman and tell me this doesn't smell like a division champ.
Well, my sources, who are usually pretty accurate, told me about 2 weeks ago it was the Cubs. And I still believe that to be so.
Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That's pretty good stuff. That's
wow.
From MLB Network. That's Harold Reynolds.
Mm-hmm.
I like Harold a lot. I like his sources.
Who are they?
And, you know, we heard the same stuff a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Didn't it seem like the Cubs are the team, this is going to happen, and then it just slowed down as they wanted to make sure they couldn't get the longer contract. So if indeed the offers remain the same, then maybe eventually it's just the Cubs.
There are rumblings that Alex Bregman favors the Cubs after his original team, the Astros. If they aren't going to be in the mix, the Cubs would be a nice landing, a soft landing for him. Harold Reynolds on the hot stove on MLB Network yesterday, or he says that, and you hope he's right. I won't feel comfortable about that until he signs, until we get the report from Bruce or Passan or whoever, John Morosi, or maybe even Ken Rosenthal, who thought that with Alex Bregman, the Cubs are a World Series contender, with a caveat. With a caveat.
That everybody else is too.
Yeah, right.
What is the caveat? What would you define that as?
Well,
they're not alone?
The Cubs can be a World Series contender. It's going to be hard for any World Series contender to be better than the Dodgers.
Well, that's
the caveat, right?
How good are the Mets going to be?
The Mets are going to be, well, to say that they're going to be better would mean that they're going to go a step further, which would be good for them, and that's also a team in front of the Cubs.
Yeah.
They have Juan Soto. You wonder if their pitching can hold up.
See, I think what everyone is saying, if you read between the lines a little bit, I think everyone is trying to say, you know, if you listen carefully, they're trying to say, the division stinks. The Cubs are the team. And that makes you, if indeed you're better than everyone else in your division, and maybe they need Bregman to prove that, but that means that you are a World Series contender because you're going to win your division.
And you're going to get in the tournament. I can accept that, and I think that would be the way that you rationalize not getting Alex Bregman, because without him, I do believe that Cubs still could be good enough to win the NL Central. But I think that in this final year of Jed Hoyer's deal and with Kyle Tucker on loan for a season, essentially, I want them to think bigger than that. I think a lot of people hope that they have aspirations that are higher than that. And you want them to think not just winning the division, in a division that, you know, you never want to discount the Brewers because of what they do, but everybody should be a little bit worse in that division.
I think they are. On paper, every team is a little bit worse.
So I don't know that you go into the season thinking that's good enough. I want the Cubs to think like they have loftier goals than just being the best team in a bad division.
The bullpen should be significantly better. So you blew 25 saves, was it, or 26
saves?
So if you split that in half, all of a sudden you've won the division going away, right?
Yes, but just tell me how you close the gap between you and the Dodgers and the Braves and the Mets and the Phillies.
You signed Bregman.
You signed Bregman. That's because even before they signed Bregman, last week we talked about the Pecota projections, right. 91 wins.
Right.
Now, if they're at 91 wins without Bregman, you've got a player in in an all-star third baseman that could make you even more, better than that. So that's what you want to look
what
at.
What would it be? 93, 95? I'm not dismissing his impact.
I want to be conservative on
91 seems like top end to me.
If you get Alex Bregman, I think that you can feel more confident about believing that you can win 90 or more games. 90 or more.
Okay.
Probably you're not going to be a 100-win team.
That's what I'm saying.
Ridiculous. Not ridiculous, but that's Dodger territory.
Yes. Yes.
You're not there because I don't think you're pitching necessarily is there yet either. We heard from Jameson Taillon yesterday. He wants to add velocity this year, which I thought was interesting at the stage of his career. We heard from Craig Counsell saying that oblique strain for Javier Saad isn't as bad as maybe initially projected. We panicked about that yesterday a little bit. They are one strong, I think, solid starting pitcher away from feeling like this is a 95-win team.
You know who else we heard from is Shota. And he said something I thought was really interesting, Mr. David. I got to get your take on it. He said that going to Japan to open the season, everybody on the team will know what it felt like for him coming to America. Wasn't that wild?
That is interesting.
Going there and playing there, they will have more insight into what it was like for him to leave Japan and come to America, come to a new country and try to fit in. Just because the cultures are so different.
I think they'll get a taste of that. They'll be exposed to that. Maybe have a better appreciation for that. But I think that the one thing that is different, very different, is that the Cubs are going to be there for a week. Shota was coming here
for life.
9 months.
Yeah, no, he was coming for a season.
Essentially changing his life career. And his career path.
But let me ask you something. When you think about that, it made me think about Seiya. Because I find him it's just like a very difficult guy to read. I cannot get a feel for how he feels about moving to the DH role. Mm-hmm. If that means he's going to be improved, is he motivated? Is that what he wants? I just find it really difficult to figure out how good he'll be.
It's an interesting question because I think what it does is you wonder about the psyche of a player who comes from Japan, a Japanese player, if he's disgruntled.
Yes.
And I think we tend to think that – and most of the success stories or most of the Japanese players that we reference are successful.
Yes.
And maybe that's a generalization, but you wonder what it's going to be like for him to have to deal with the realities of being away from his homeland.
Yeah.
And also dealing with a situation that he's not necessarily all invested in emotionally. That's a tough reality.
Dealing with failure? Is that where you're going?
Adversity. I don't want to say failure. Maybe failure in his mind.
That's what I'm
I don't
asking.
Think that being the starting designated hitter on a playoff caliber team is failure. I think it's not what he expected, but it's different. It's a form of adversity that maybe he hasn't faced before.
Yeah.
And it's something he may not look forward to. And I think what you're maybe tying together is Shota, who was all in and had success, which made his first year here great.
And
the transition,
and
wonderful.
He has the personality, and he smiles, and you know how he feels about things. He'll do a little dance.
Yeah.
But I don't get that from Seiya. I can't read him at all.
Do you have empathy for him, or do you have like the idea that, okay, you know what? You should be happy being a Cub.
I would never invite him to a poker game, Mr. David.
Because you can't read him?
Because I'd have no hope reading him, and he has so much more money than me. He'd just outbet me.
He would outbet you.
He could bluff me all day long.
It's interesting because I don't think that we get a good sense of maybe guys like Say Suzuki, how they're feeling because of their inability, not their inability, our inability to read them or to communicate with them effectively. We don't hear from him a lot. And when we do, it's through a translator. So it's hard to get to know him as well as his teammates do.
All right. We got a couple of people who want to check in. Let's start with Ron. Ron's on the South Side. Hey, Ron. Happy baseball season, buddy.
Hey, Happy New Year. I operate on the baseball calendar, man. Happy New Year to you guys. Hey, Mully, look here. I'm going to make it real quick. First of all, there are two players, in terms of being optimistic and happy, there are two players that we don't have to hear their names again. And I think you know the two that I'm talking about.
Yes.
So
yes.
Now, but the most important thing that I get to, and David, you mentioned about them signing Michael Taylor. But prior to this, my position was I really want to see guys like that. I was thinking about Kevin Millard last year, Paul DeJong. You know, I mean, where are the players that are developed? You asked about Oscar Colas. He's still on the team. See, so my thing is, if you're going to be bad, I want to see some players being developed. Ryan Ramos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's hurt. Ramos is hurt, yeah. I believe, right?
Yeah.
Vargas.
Dominique Fletcher. But recently, I mean, it's one thing. I don't want to hear any more flipping. I don't want to hear we're going to get this guy, we can flip him.
Right.
But the whole thing is to bring in prospects. So when you bring the prospects in, you have to develop them. So those are my things. Looking forward to talking to you guys. Hey, if you all can, I talked to this guy like I talked to you all. I talked to him from the beginning. I haven't been able to say congratulations to Connor, but he was very, very nice to me, if you all possibly care. I know you all busy.
We'll pass it along, Ron.
We will, Ron.
Congratulations. Yeah. Connor McKnight coming up at 7:45.
Yeah, Connor's a great guy.
Yeah, he is.
And in fact, we're going to take a time out here so we can get more time with him. We'll talk to Connor next. It'll be fun to get a chance to.
Yeah, he's going to work at the Chicago Sports Network, be part of the broadcast, and he knows the White Sox as well as anybody in town.
No shadow of a doubt about that. All right, Connor McKnight will indeed make his return to the Score, or at least for an interview. And we'll do that next. Great talk to him. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score.
I do think we're going to win more games than we did last year.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It's our guy, Brandon Fryer, having some fun. And we are delighted to welcome Connor McKnight to the program. Connor joins us on The Score Hotline, brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Connor now with Chicago Sports Network, covering, as always, the Chicago White Sox. Connor, good morning. How are you?
Fellas, good morning. Another daycare drop-off completed for the McKnight household, so we feel like today's a win, and it's not even 8. So great to be with you.
That's great. Great to have you back, Connor. So let's talk about the White Sox. Yesterday we heard from Chris Getz. Just interpret what you heard and exactly the way the White Sox are approaching the spring training.
Yeah, you know, I think, listen, when Chris says more wins than last year, yes, that's great, and I think Chris would agree with most when he says it should happen, right? I mean, 41 right. is a low number. But I think when you kind of look forward, what I'm excited about when it comes to camp, and I'm looking forward to getting down there in a couple of weeks, I like that there's going to be competition for jobs in a camp. I think especially when you've got a first-year manager, a new manager like Will Venable, being able to look around camp and say, there are things to compete for here, go out and get it. It allows you a couple of different things. One, to assess how each individual player kind of performs in that competitive environment, and it'll be for the first time for Venable, knowing he doesn't know a lot of these guys all that well, obviously. And I think it also allows you to kind of hone an edge for some young guys like Chase Mydroff, who had a great AAA season and looks on the cusp of being a pretty good major leaguer. How good is going to be interesting, but he gets to define that more than likely toward the start of the season here. Now, I'm not saying that the actual numbers and what they put up in spring training are going to be all that important. As you guys know, evaluating actual performance in spring training can be really difficult. But I think that you've had a competition matters, and I think the White Sox are set to light those competitions at least on fire a little bit when they start things off.
Yeah, it's at least going to – I don't want to get too negative about it, but – they could lose 100 games and have like an excellent season, right? They could improve by 20 games and still not get below 100 losses. But it's just you want them moving forward to have things that you feel like good people get. You know what I mean? Like you just want them. And I don't know. Like I don't know what to expect from Josh Rojas, for instance. I have no idea what that's going to look like. I think Tauchman, we know we've seen him play in Chicago. We feel good about him. I'm very interested in the catcher position because they got a couple of great young catchers, but they got a couple veteran guys, which makes you feel like the catchers aren't ready yet. So I don't know how to look at every position. And Ron called earlier. He said to say hey to you. He's a great guy, Ron from the South Side. He is. And he was saying he wants to see more young guys. He wants to see the development. And I think everyone kind of feels that way, but you want to see a little bit of success somehow.
Yeah, I get it. And the way I talked about a lot of these veterans the White Sox have added, last year and this year when I was doing White Sox Weekly is in terms of insulation, right? You don't want to have too much, but you definitely don't want to have too little. And what you're trying to insulate are the individual prospects that are coming up through the ranks, right? Colson Montgomery, who may or may not be the opening day starting shortstop, needs a little bit of insulation. Just questions about his defense. He didn't have a great year last year. Just how much, though, is the next question. A lot of people, including myself, thought there'd be like a, like a veteran signing, like a Nick Ahmed or something like that. Nothing, super enticing, but definitely somebody can hold down the position and allow Colson or whatever prospect you're talking about to get the seasoning or readying that they need in April and May or what have you. And I think in a lot of spots, the White Sox have acquired, a reasonable amount of insulation. And what you want to do, the needle you're trying to thread, and it's difficult to do because the rules have changed on how you can do this, but you want to make sure that insulation is also interesting to other teams come, July 15, July 18, something like that, because you'd love to be able to, to capitalize on some of that stuff when those prospects become ready to evolve. And that's really hard to do. Look at the White Sox last season. They got some return for a guy like Eric Fetty, younger players for sure. They, got some things for other pieces as well. But, the big trade was the guy that they had already on that roster and Garrett Crochet, poised to become one of the better lefties in baseball, hopefully, if you're Boston. And you've got to make sure that that got ready too. And I think I definitely like the way that White Sox minor league system looks now as opposed to how it looked, call it 8 months ago. But there's still a lot of work to be done development-wise, despite how many lists of best prospects that Noah Schultz or Hagen Smith or Kyle Teal or Colson Montgomery end up on,
Well, I think with Colson Montgomery, it's fascinating because you look at the roster and the outfield has placeholders and there are placeholders at other positions. I don't know who that is at shortstop, Connor, because Rojas, Lenin Sosa, Brooks Baldwin, Jacob Amaya. How realistic is it to expect, or are
Brooks
you
Baldwin?
Would you project Colson Montgomery could start opening day at shortstop?
Yeah, I think at this point I probably would, but it's 51% to 49%. It's just right there. I'll be really interested to see in the first couple of weeks just kind of how a guy like Will Venable or even Chris gets as he continues to speak a little bit here. Talks about those guys, right? Your Brooks Baldwin, your Chase Meidroff, your Josh Rojas at short, right? He's played there a little bit. Mm. It had not gone well the last couple of years or in a few years ago when he was playing short. I'll be really curious to see what kind of opportunities those guys get. Colson, I got a chance to talk to him a little bit more than I ever had at Sox Fest a couple of weeks ago. He wants this. He's ready for it. He wants it. He also understands where he sits in the context of kind of the prospect hype and the production he was able to put up last season. I think the White Sox want to give him run. And philosophically, David, if you're asking me, okay, you got a shortstop prospect who's fallen off a little bit in terms of his ranking, and defense has been a question. How good can you be? Are you Corey Seager level good, where you got to out-hit some of your mistakes in your limited range, or can you make that next step to being a, head above water kind of shortstop? I think you got to let him play short until he tells you he can't at a major league level. And from that approach, I think the White Sox are taking the right kind of track to things here.
Connor, who's going to be the opening day starter? Is it Jonathan Cannon just because he's Jonathan Cannon? He's their own guy?
I'd like to see them go with kind of a – and I know Martin Perez is like signed and will wear a White Sox uniform, so technically qualifies as an internal option. But you know what I mean, Molly. I'd like to see one of those guys step up and take it. I think in a world where, in a world where Drew Thorpe hadn't had the elbow setback, I think he'd be a candidate for perhaps opening day. Obviously, he did have the setback and things are trending in the right direction, but I'd really like to see Cannon do it. I talked to him a little bit about that opportunity, and you know, his eyes got a little wide. He understands what's out there on the table for him, and I believe we talked before Perez had been signed, if not, you know, it's just a few days after. I think your money probably goes to Martin Perez, a veteran lefty who's been able to do it. I think it's a guy that, you know, Will Venable can look at and say, you are reliable. You know how to get yourself out of whatever you've created for yourself on the field. I think that works. I think the money probably have to go there. But listen, I think as much as we're curious about the position players the White Sox have acquired or have ready to hit the bigs, the pitching is still the strength of what this organization can be. And finding out just how much of a foundation you've got pitching-wise, how many of these guys are going to be threes? How many of these guys can reach their ceilings as twos? How many of these guys need to be bullpen guys? And if they do go to the bullpen, how good can they be? I'm looking at you, Nick Nastrini, right? Like, that matters.
Right.
So finding that out is going to be critical here in 2025, because if the White Sox, you know, can get on the timeline that everybody wants them to be on, you know, something like 75, 80-something wins really soon here, you've got to know what you have to supplement with. And understanding that from a pitching standpoint is, like I said, crucial.
Great stuff, Connor. Thanks a ton. Great talking to you. Say hey to all of our mutual friends.
Thanks, Connor.
Sounds good, boys.
Good stuff.
That's Connor McKnight.
He'll be doing great work at the Chicago Sports Network in games and being utilizing his strengths, which are analytics, and just, as you heard there, just a great knowledge of the roster.
Yeah, should be a lot of fun. Makes the season, makes things a little bit better for those of us that are stuck following that team, sadly. What? Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
The details behind the Diddy indictment, Taylor Swift's stalkers, Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.